Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy C. I'm from New York and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Today's date is May 13th, 2026. Today we're reading from the Big Book. We are in the chapter More About Alcoholism. We are on page 37, the third paragraph, which starts, "In some circumstances, we have gone out," through the one paragraph ending, "the terrific consequences might be," and we're commenting just on that one paragraph. For today, the 12 steps, we have Arlene E., 12 Traditions, Nancy R., reader of the text is Sally A., page 164 is Christina L., backup is Charles H., our newcomer greeter is Reva P., our second hour host is Leah S., and announcements is Kathy S. The reference number for yesterday, Tuesday, May 12th, for our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 23,450, that is 23,450, and for our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 23,451, that's 23,451. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth edition states, "Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers." At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Arlene E. to please read the 12 steps. Come on in, Arlene.
Hello, everyone. This is Arlene E. here to read the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will over and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Arlene. I'm now going to ask Nancy R. to read the 12 traditions. Come on in, Nancy.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kathy. This is Nancy R., compulsive overeater, recovered in New York. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you so much for letting me do service, Kathy. Take care. I pass.
Thank you, Nancy. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no absence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. And press *1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are in the chapter More About Alcoholism. We are on page 37. We're on the third paragraph, In Some Circumstances. I'm now going to ask Sally A. to please come in and begin reading. Come on in, Sally. Sally, *1, please.
Oh, I love reading to myself. Good morning, Kath, and good morning, everyone. It's Sally A. In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. So there is a lot here in this paragraph that's tucked between two stories, the story of Jim and the story of Fred, the jaywalker. And when I see this, in some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk. We're talking about the nonchalant behavior But in all honesty, that's really always what it is when we pick up, because we've already heard that we have this obsessive compulsive disorder. We have this mental defect that, in my case, I know it started as a baby because I've seen videos of me playing with spaghetti all over my face, my top of my head, on the tray in front of me. And so I know that this was a playmate. This was a dear friend, food I'm talking about, specifically sugar, because I have a sugar addiction, whether it's complex or simple sugars or natural in the form of fruit. I have an addiction to sugar. And when we go on here, it talks about, but even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification, our excuses for the binge was insanely insufficient. And, you know, interestingly, a lot of what it says here in this paragraph, backing up a little bit here to that first sentence, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. Those words are said in the paragraph on the bottom of 87, which talks about the importance of the pause. We have to pause. We are impulsive. That is one of the problems that we have, and we have to practice the pause because this is part of who we are, this impulsivity. And then it's the last sentence where it says, during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. So we have a period of premeditation, and that's why it's so important for us to practice this pause. Think about what you're about to do. You know, I just want to say, as a psych nurse working on an acute psychiatric floor in a hospital, I remember seeing these cutters when they came in and wondering, what in the world is that about? And then it struck me one day, what makes you any different? You're binging, and you, for years I was binging. I'm not binging now, I'm recovered. But I was binging, and I was adding piles of fat to my body. I was creating rolls. Is that any different than a cutter that finds their comfort zone in cutting? And for me, the comfort zone was binging when I already was 250 pounds. What was that about? It's the same thing. And that's the story of Jim and Fred that we're tucked in the middle of here. Jim and Fred are really the same thing. They both have an obsession. That's what this this is talking about. Thank you, Kathy. Okay, I'll end with that. Have a great day, everyone.
Sally, thank you so much for getting us started. I'm going to take some names. And before I do, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you'd like to share, please press star 1. I'm ready to take our first lineup.
Tony B.
B. Florida.
Patty M.
Reba P.
Bonnie B.
Okay, so far I have Pete, Bonnie, somebody F, and Patty. Is
Tony
there somebody
B.
F?
Allison B.
Oh, okay, Tony
Reba
B.
P. Leah S.
Is there a Patty?
Yes, Patty M.
Okay, so I have Pete, Bonnie, Tony B, Patty M, Reva P, Leah S. Did I miss anyone's name out there?
Allison B, Florida.
Thank you, Allison. Let's go with that first lineup. We have Pete B, followed by Bonnie, and then Tony. Hey, Pete, come on in and share with us, please.
Thanks, Kathy, for taking the meeting. I appreciate your service. You do a great job. My name is Pete B, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in Pennsylvania. So what's this paragraph telling us, right? You know, we can make all the brilliant and recovery-informed observations of Jim's behavior prior to taking a drink and figure out what he didn't do and what he did do and, you know, for some reason think that we know what he's thinking because we've been in similar circumstances. But the truth is we don't know what Jim's thinking. But what this paragraph is telling us is that it doesn't matter what he was thinking. It doesn't matter what his premeditation was or wasn't, right? It really doesn't matter, because what caused Jim to go into this whole debacle was not his addiction to alcohol. It was what happened when he put the whiskey in his milk, the abnormal reaction that occurs in only a real compulsive overeater or a real alcoholic, right? It's not whether he thought about it or he didn't. He put the whiskey in his drink. He got the allergy of the body, and he couldn't stop drinking. Like, this is what we have to understand. You know, addiction may drive me to the substance, but it doesn't explain not being able to stop once I start, right? And that's the distinguishing characteristic for the real compulsive overeater. And until I understood that, all of my attempts at trying to figure it out and, you know, what to do in case this thought came in my mind or what to do in case this emotion popped up, all of it was frivolous. It was good to talk about in a meeting, right? It was good to get around with people and, you know, discuss how we're all the same and all these different things. But the fact of the matter, the doctor's opinion says it. Right? It says, while we admit it injurious, what's injurious about alcohol to the alcoholic? Not that it produces a sense of ease and comfort. That's not the injurious aspect. That happens for everyone. What's injurious for the with alcohol to the alcoholic is that it triggers the phenomena of craving. And that's the same thing for me as a compulsive overeater. There are certain substances, certain ingredients, and certain behaviors that trigger an abnormal reaction. The emotions don't trigger the reaction. The feelings don't trigger the reaction. Restless, irritable, discontented don't trigger the reaction. It's the substance or the behavior that triggers the reaction. So what does the doctor say? The doctor says the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And until I recognized that and could realize that for myself, I was always subject to another debacle. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Hey, thank you so much, Pete. That is Pete B. from Pennsylvania. Next up, we have Bonnie B., followed by Tony, and then Patty. Hey, Bonnie, come on in and share with us.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks, Kathy, for moderating. Thank you, Sally, for opening. And obviously, thanks, Pete. That was a great share, too. Blessed, Bonnie B., Florida today, moving forward back in Minnesota for the next 5 months, but gratefully recovered by the grace of God and just doing the next right thing. You know, when I read this paragraph this morning, I thought about some of the things I had done. And it was sobering. It was it's a little overwhelming. It was like living a different life, right? Having gone out deliberately, truly choosing to get in the car, go to a grocery store, get the largest bag of fill in the blank, sit in the car, my husband calling over and over and me not picking up. And not knowing why. Not getting any of it, but being so overwhelmed in the middle of it, and yet it was an out of body experience. I was getting in the car, I was driving to the store, I knew what I was buying, and I knew why I was doing it. I wanted a hit. And again, it was to relieve something, not like it ever worked. Because the moment I got home, my husband would say, why? Then it just started all over because I didn't know why. I just knew that I didn't like things as they were playing out. I couldn't figure out exactly like all the pieces to the puzzle. But this program has given me the pieces to the puzzle. There are two pieces. There is the allergy of the body, no doubt. When I touch certain substances, game over. Doesn't matter what it is. I know what it is. It lights me up. But I also have this disposition where I want everything to go the way I want it to go. And if I don't lean into the it's not mine, it's God's, I will drop back into that most often nervousness. Worry, trying to manage things. And that combination is deadly for me. It is absolutely deadly. I have to put the foods down. I have to be rigorously honest about what triggers that allergy. But then I have to be mindful when I lose my state of peace. It is so visceral to me when I'm clean. I know when I've disconnected from God. It is so obvious to me. And so I have a program. I have a program to run back to. And again, I'm so grateful for these chapters in this book because it draws a picture of who I am at that DNA level, and it gives me a solution of how to live free. And I'm blessed. I'm blessed today, and I will pass with that. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Bonnie B. from Florida and Minnesota. Next up, we have Tony B., followed by Patty and then Reva. Come on in, Tony.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for your service, and thank you, Sally, for your lead share. My name's Tony B. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater living in Scotland. This paragraph makes me think of the chapter, Our Southern Friend, and it's got one of the best descriptions of a premeditated drunk in it. But it's heartening. That this story, because he has been getting into the lives of other people. He has been learning that he has to turn his thoughts outwards. But I love these few pages in Our Southern Friend where he's to-ing and fro-ing. He's kind of doing his best to get into the lives of other people. And then, oh, his finances aren't right, and gloom's surrounding him. And then the thoughts... And then he it's a cold-blooded idea, premeditated. He fixes up a little apartment over the garage. You know, he's going to get food and liquor. He's going to drink little sips. And it's quite something. But he's done enough. That's the thing. And it makes me think of Dr. Bob saying, why do I work with others? Because I take a bit more insurance out against, you know, the possibility of me having a slip. Because when he's halfway down the driveway, this is Fitzmaio in Our Southern Friend, the thought strikes him. And that's it. That's God to me. He's done enough for God to be there. He'll be honest anyway. And he goes back and talks to his wife. And thank God he doesn't have to. But as has been shared already, you know, premeditated or not, sudden, just the thought comes, oh, it's going to be fine. Food slips into my mouth by mistake. You know, I can't disappoint this person because they've made it for me. It doesn't matter. I have no effective mental defense at certain times for whatever reason, or perhaps apart from it slipping into my mouth. I mean, that I probably couldn't do anything about. But anyway, you know, I can't, and it's serious. You know, I've been 3 years now, thank God, entirely abstinent. My disease will have worsened. I don't know what it's going to be, what it would be like if I went back into binging. I have no idea. I might well kill myself. You know, it would be that, it's been that bad for me in the past. But it doesn't matter. I have to know that. I have to know that for myself, how serious it is. And the food is only the first half of the first step. You know, after that, it's all about God. It's all about finding a power greater than me. And always, that word is here again, in the light of what always happened. And the terrific consequences. That's what I was trying to emphasize. Thanks, Kathy. I'll leave it there. Love you all. Have a blessed day.
Thank you so much. That's Tony B. from Scotland. If you've just joined us, we are in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 37, the paragraph that starts In Some Circumstances. Next up, we have Patty M., followed by Reva P. and then Leah S. Patty, come on in and share with us, please.
Can you hear me?
Please press. We hear you well. Thank you, Patty.
Okay, thank you so much. I wanted to say, rarely have I ever started a binge or relapse that could last for years, premeditated. It wasn't always like, oh, screw it, I'm going to gain a bunch of weight again. It has always been the mental twist for me that says, you can do this. You can have a piece of wedding cake after a year of abstaining and just go home and not have any more. But then, of course, oh, that worked. And then the next day, I'm off to the races and finding more cake or more sweets or whatever. And I tried this experiment 3 different times over the years. You would think I would learn, but no, I'm a compulsive overeater. By the third time, I was eating everyone else's cake at the table and into a relapse for a year or more, I never know. That is the mental twist for me that says I don't have a disease. And then the allergy of the body takes over, particularly with sugar items. And so I am so grateful and blessed to be food neutral without my binge foods for 10 months. But I have to work a rigorous program so that I don't get that mental twist. I'm blessed to have neutrality, to not be fighting with the food, but I want to stay that way. And I have to enlarge my spiritual life because that mental twist and allergy of the body is bigger than me. I could sit in therapy for 30 years and try to figure out, you know, oh, my mother wasn't affectionate or I'm not happy in my marriage or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. That's not the reason. The reason is that I'm a different breed from normal people. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I am so grateful that these men sat down in 1939 and wrote this book so that all of us could recover. And I am blessed today to be free, to be abstinent, and to have the ability to work this program without spending 30 years in therapy. I'm grateful to all of the fellows that have shared. And with that, I'll pass.
Patty, before you go, can you let us know where you're calling in from, please?
I am from New Jersey, Eastern Standard Time.
Thank you so much. That was Patty M. from New Jersey. Next up, we have Reva P., followed by Leia, and then Allison. And then after Allison, I could take another lineup. Reva, come on in and share with us, please.
Hey, good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. You know, whenever I read this paragraph, I always remember the concept for me of eating out somebody. I remember being really pissed off with my manager. I wasn't in program, and I came home and shut the door, and this was my brilliant idea. I was going to eat at her. I was so angry that I was going to punish her, ridiculous thought, by binging my face off. So this to me is like the halt eating, the eating to get the edge off. I'm angry, I'm lonely, I'm tired. And you know, thinking that those are plausible excuses. So I love this chapter because whether it's a trivial excuse or an insane idea or I'm doing it deliberately, it's all insanity. And for all of those supposedly plausible excuses that seem to make sense to me at the time, which only later in recovery do I realize are ridiculous and insane, I have no defense against them. So once I put the food down and I'm abstinent and I don't have the alcoholic ingredients, behaviors, substances in my body, if I just had the allergy, I would be good to go. So these paragraphs remind me, why do I need to continue to keep working the steps to clear my channel, to access power, because it keeps telling me over and over, I have no defense against these crazy thoughts that make sense when I'm in the disease. And this is why I need to continue with 10, 11, and 12, because I need continued access to power so I can differentiate the true from the false. So when I get this crazy idea, like I'm really pissed off, I'm gonna eat at my husband, it's like, wait a minute, Reva, that makes no sense. You'll get relief for maybe a second, and then you'll trigger the allergy. You'll be off to the races. You're going to be miserable. That only comes by having had a spiritual awakening and keeping myself in fit spiritual condition. Yeah, so it's not about never get angry, never get lonely, never get tired. I have steps that help me deal with that and a power that removes those things so I don't need to do the crazy stuff with food that never worked anyway. So with that, I pass.
Thank you so much. That's Reva P. from Toronto, Canada. Next up, we have Leah S., followed by Allison B., and after Allison, I could take the second lineup. Come on in, Leah.
Thank you very much. What a wonderful meeting. My name is Leah S. I'm recovered in Brooklyn, New York. Here's the sentence that sticks out right now. There was little serious or effective thought. So I never thought about the end game. I never thought about what I'm doing before. And this is precisely what happened to me back in, I believe, 2018 or 19. I'm not sure. I set out and I went to a place where nobody knows me. I went into a very expensive restaurant, ordered dessert first, knowing exactly. Had lost my weight, was pretty okay with myself, and horrified with my conditions in my life and situation in my life, and ordered everything starting with the dessert. And then when I picked up my spoon, suddenly something happened to me. How these steps work. And I was thinking about the third step. I'm not going to control this. Once it gets into me, I'm not going to control this at all. And suddenly another thought came in. So why am I doing this? Why? And I'll never forget what happened. I quickly got up and walked over to the cashier and said, give me my bill. And the cashier looked at me very, very puzzled. What's going on here? And I said, you know what? When you see someone walking by that has a shopping bag, that was my idea, you know, and is in need of a meal, you better give this meal to that person. But I want to pay for it. And that was my price for abstinence. That was my price, and I'll never forget it. Even now, it's like I'm reliving it again, how this third step just got to me and said, okay, I got to navigate my life. I got to go through whatever I got to go through, but definitely not hurt my body. With that, I will pass.
Thank you so much. That's Leah S. from New York. Next up, we have Allison. Allison, please come in and tell us where you're calling from. And after her, I can take another lineup. Come on in, Allison.
Allison B., calling from Florida, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for everyone's service. I wanted to share that I am currently on step 3, trying to finish that up to get into step 4. And with that in mind, looking at this paragraph, it really feels like I can relate to each sentence. It's kind of a progression of my disease at the beginning, in the sense of maybe I was like a little moderate eater and I could somewhat control it, and feelings sometimes were my justification for eating. A lot of depression was a justification for eating. That felt like, okay, that came and went, like feelings go, so it didn't feel, it felt justified and there were thoughts in mind, and yet still I would be harmed by my actions. I would be taking that bite and then couldn't stop and would go back for more. I'd be stealing food from grocery stores. The insanity that would happen after these feelings that felt justified prompted. I get that. And then as the disease progressed and it got to the point where I stopped caring, there was no thought. It was get up, figure out what would ease and make me feel comfortable, stop the pain, and hate myself, and then start the loop all over again. So I completely relate to this paragraph. I do want to say that as I'm journeying forward, I now do 5 minutes of meditation, 5 minutes of prayer, 5 minutes of writing. I was religious, but I'm not a spiritual person, and I have my moments of agnostic, but my sponsor said this is what I should do, and so she's like, she's my medicine person, if you will, my medical person, but for spirit. So she tells me to do it, I do it, even when I don't believe, I do it, and I get the rewards from it. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much. That was Allison B. from Florida. I'm going to take a second lineup. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience. So if you share it on Monday or Tuesday on either meeting, we ask that you hold back. We're in the big book, More About Alcoholism. We're on page 37, the third paragraph, which starts in some circumstances to the end, terrific consequences might be. Please press star 1 to unmute yourself. I'm ready to take another lineup.
Jennifer C.
And Jennifer C. and Karen K. and Sarah and G.
Laura L. from Connecticut.
Thank you, Laura. Jennifer, Karen, Sarah, Laura. Anyone else? We have a few more minutes after that. Okay,
Ashley,
let's start with Jennifer. Thank you, Ashley. Anyone else like to share after Ashley? Okay, we're going to start with Jennifer C., followed by Karen K., and then Sarah G. Come on in, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your service. Jennifer C. recovered in South Carolina. You know, this is all about the strange mental blank spot. In some circumstances, right, like the book tells us, at certain times, it uses terminology, in some cases, right, like 80% of the time, I'm working hard for my abstinence. I'm making the calls. I'm doing the things. I'm weighing. I'm measuring. I'm loving recovery. Oh, I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. Oh, recovery is so good. Nothing tastes better than abstinence feels, right? And then something happens. And this is the alcoholic torture that the doctor's opinion is telling us that we have. It's when the brain switches up on me and all of a sudden I'm torturing myself. The same person that was just partnering with God's will, giving everything she had to life and health and losing weight and feeling good, right? All of a sudden, she don't care anymore. She don't care. She's on the phone making her call and she's planning her binge while she's on the phone making that call. Wait, what? What happened? The strange mental blank spot where I torture myself with my own hands for the purpose of pleasure. My greatest pleasure is the thing that is destroying me the most. Wait, what? Am I that girl? Do I do that? Do I keep going back out in traffic? And you know what? Like, I know I'm going to break my leg this time. I know it's going to hurt me. I know that the food doesn't lead me to a good place. I already know that. That's why I'm here. Guess what? I don't care. That's the strange mental blank spot. And you know what this book is teaching me this whole time is trying to convince me. Guess what, sunshine? Only God can save you now. Only God can save you now. Well, I don't believe in God and I still have recovery. Well, I feel sorry for you. You know why? Because I'm one of the lucky ones. I need God. I need a power greater than me. I need God to save me. And that's what this book is teaching us. Only God can save us now because my own mind might get me 80% of the way, but it's not going to get me 100%. I need this psychic change in my soul. I need this sub
subconscious reorganization where I no longer desire to go play in traffic. Period. I don't want it. I don't need it. I don't crave it. I don't even think about it. I pour all my energy and my time into doing God's will. That is the grace of God. That is the power of God. And it's available for every single one of us. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Jennifer C. from South Carolina. Next up, we have Karen K., followed by Sarah G. Karen, come on in and share with us and let us know where you're calling in from, please.
Good morning, family. My name's Karen K. I'm calling from Mississippi. This paragraph really spoke to me. And what really jumped out at me was where it says at the end, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. And for me, there was no serious or effective thought. It was the thought and I acted on it. Like I didn't think about the consequences. And my consequences were severe and I just kept doing it. And like the previous, caller said, you know, I can't do this abstinence thing without God because on my own, I'm going to overeat and I'm going to eat things I'm not supposed to be eating because it's not healthy for me. And, you know, it went on for years. It went on for years. And now that I've got abstinence, I don't even think about the food anymore. I think about my healthy food. You know, it's almost time for me to eat my breakfast. I'm thinking about my breakfast right now. And I'm excited about my breakfast. And like I've never been able to have this kind of freedom, and I don't use the excuses anymore. I've been struggling with depression for a while, and I've leaned on God and I've stayed abstinent, and I've struggled with anxiety for a while, and leaned on God and stayed abstinent. And you know, it's a miracle. It's a true miracle that I've been able to come through these past 3 months abstinent and gotten to the other side and just continue. I continue meetings. I continue making my phone calls. I continue my morning time with God and time with God throughout the day. I struggled with that for a while. And I had to learn how to plug him in or plug into him throughout my day so that I wouldn't forget. So thank you to everyone who's doing service and thank you for this meeting. I love you guys and I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank you so much. That's Karen K. from Mississippi. Next up, we have Sarah G. followed by Laura L. and then Ashley. And we're going to have time to have one more share after Ashley. Sarah, please come in and share with us.
Hi, good morning. This is Sarah G. calling from New York. Thank you all for your service and your shares and just having this inner peace of this is where I need to be right now. I used to have such an aversion to 10 steps because I had just challenging times. Like just someone said, call this person. She's so recovered. She does 10 steps great. And it would last a half an hour. And I didn't know what to do with myself. It was just challenging, you know, at the time. This was a few years ago. And thank God over time I built up. And now I love doing 10 steps. And yet, the work that I need to do is so vigorous because I was at a happy occasion on Sunday and, you know, I saw someone there who I'm not close with now and person was very dear to me a while ago, and something happened, and, you know, I worked at making amends, and the person's just not interested. They're just not interested in continuing the friendship, and you know, so, but we treat each other kindly, and yet it's just, you know, even though it's been years and not seeing this person in years, and, you know, it still hurts. I mean, for me, this, you know, and, you know, yes, I did a 10th step, and that's not enough. I needed to do more. And, like, different things happened, you know, on my way back, as something happened to my car, and I wasn't sure what, it seems like someone bumped into me, and I looked, and there was no one behind me. When I got home, I realized it was someone on the side of me. You know, I didn't think about it. Like, this never happened to me. And so I needed to do a 10 step on that. Like, there was, like, just a buildup. And so, yes, I did 10 steps, but I still need to go deeper. And, you know, this is what my process is and part of my journey. And it's hard because I am starting to have that mental twist, like, wait, what's going on? I want to be soothed, like, say, and no, keep on bringing God into the picture, and how grateful I am to have this program and to have this peace of mind. And yeah, so I go back and sometimes have, like, what's going on with me? What is that mental twist? I keep on turning back, and I turn to people in program, and I'm just so grateful for all of you. And okay, and with that, I pass.
Thank you so much. That's Sarah G from New York. Next up, we have Laura L, followed by Ashley, and then I can have one more person after Ashley. We are on page 37, more about alcoholism, the third paragraph, and some circumstances, ending with the terrific consequences might be. Laura, please come in and share with us and tell us where you're calling in, please.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. Thank you all for your service and your shares. I'm Laura L. from Connecticut, compulsive overeater. And so this paragraph and people's shares made me remember that my justification for deliberately eating, overeating, when I was a teenager, was that it made my mom really angry. She hated that I was gaining weight. She hated everything about it, and my parents would force me to weigh myself in front of them and force me to go to Weight Watchers and force me to go on a doctor's diet. And it was so sad because thinking back on it, I mean, I ate over my rage and over my discomfort of being in a alcoholic, narcissistic, and sometimes violent household. And when I realized that my mother, you know, wanted me to look perfectly and not heavy, I wasn't heavy. I was like 15 pounds overweight, maybe, or 20 at my highest when I was a teenager. Gained a lot more later in life. But this was revenge. I was pushing back. I knew it would make her angry getting heavy, but it was also making me hate myself more. But it sated my own rage. So it was very complicated. And I just drew more into myself and, you know, started just shutting down, as well as also blowing up in explosive rages. So it was a mess. But, after it, when I got to college, and then I was drinking and eating, and didn't have to see them anymore, my parents, and for, you know, not that much anyway, and there was divorce and all that stuff, but yeah, it just got worse and worse, and in terms of the disease, so, you know, found myself in the rooms when I was 23, but then, as some people know, I went to one meeting, and then I didn't go back until I was 41, because I was so freaked out that I knew somebody at that meeting. But, you know, when I was ready, I entered the rooms, and it took me quite a while to get the program and to develop a faith, but thank God, thank goddess I did, and so grateful that today, you know, I have entire abstinence, that today I can rely on a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, because there was a lot of insanity. And it just got worse, you know, progressing from grazing to purging to some really disgusting habits that I got to get rid of the food. So, and the weight especially. So, yeah, I'm still trying to unpack some of the perfectionism that, and the rage from that era long time ago. But I've been able to do a lot of that. Yeah, thank you. I've been able to do a lot of that work with you all and with program. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
Laura, thank you so much. That's Laura L. from Connecticut. We have 5 minutes left. We have Ashley, and then excuse me?
What page are we on?
We are on page 37 in More About Alcoholism, the third paragraph, which starts in some circumstances. Ashley, would you come in and share with us and tell us the first initial of your last name and where you're calling in from, please?
Sure. My name's Ashley F. in Kentucky. And
thank you.
I am reworking the steps after a relapse. And I am, you know, this connection that was made on the meeting between this page and then our instructions that continue later on page 87 and 88. And as I am reflective about, I've had many relapses in this illness, but this is the first one that I've had when I was recovered. Like I was, you know, I believed myself to be safe and protected, and the justification of returning to insane behavior because of nervousness, anger, worry, depression, hurt, fear, all of those things that I didn't take to God. I had this series of a few days, about 6 days, where some significant things happened. And because in the moment, I was thinking like, okay, I'm okay. Like I know eating would be insane. So like, just keep doing the next right thing as far as what you're responsible for in terms of to your daughter, to your mother, to your, you know, psychotic family member. And I just kept relying on my own power, and I don't have the defense. I don't have it. I don't have the defense. And the crazy thing is sometimes, sure, I do. Sometimes, sure. And sometimes it's not enough. And I'm so tired of having my ass kicked by this. And I also am really, it sounds crazy. I've heard people say before, and I'm like, that's crazy. But I'm thankful because I'm seeing new things. I hope and pray that I don't have to have a relapse every time I need to learn something. But I'm seeing this mental state in a new way. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much. That's Ashley S. from Kentucky. We have 2 minutes left. Would someone like to take the last 2 minutes?
Monica K. in Michigan.
Monica, come on in. Please tell us your name, last initial, and where you're calling in from, please.
Good morning. My name is Monica T. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And we're in the chapter more about alcoholism, more about my mental obsession, more about my insanity, more about my inability to think straight. And my take here is that on the page before, we had Jim, and he had the sudden thought, you know, that sudden thought that was just sudden, and he acts on it without any thinking, any, you know, nothing, and what it led to. But in here, in this paragraph, they're saying, well, sometimes we've gone out deliberately, you know? So I may feel justified about something, and I'm ticked off at you, so I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to get even with you and eat. And even though it's, okay, so I've got a premeditated thing going on here. I'm thinking about this binge. I'm planning for it. I'm getting all my ducks in a row. But the bottom line is, whether it is a sudden thing or I'm planning it, the bottom line is I have this insanity, this inability to think straight, and I have absolutely no memory of the consequences or the resolutions that I have made that I'm not going to eat again. Just absolutely crazy. You know, my mind, this inability to think straight says it's okay. It'll be different this time. Oh, you deserve it. You know, they were really mean to you. The consequences are always the same. It's just insane. And I just need a power that's greater than me that can remove this abnormal thinking. And thank God, if I work this program every day, that's a gift he gives to me every morning. And at night, it's like, thank you, God. And with that, I'll pass.
Monica, thank you so much. That was Monica T. from Florida. Thank you for taking us out. Thank you, everyone, for a wonderful Wednesday. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following. The share ID for today, Wednesday, May 13th, 2020, 23,453. That's 23453. We'll now close with a reading from the big book. We're going to go to page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Christina L., please come on in and read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning, Christina L., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.